You're listening to the New Evangelicals Podcast. Hey everyone, welcome to the New Evangelicals Response. I'm Tim, the host of this segment. Join us every Wednesday as we respond to commentary on the pressing issues of our day, offering a thoughtful response rooted in love, justice, inclusivity, and of course, non-dehumanization. Let's get into it. What's up, friends? How are we doing? Good to be back with you. On this video, I wanted to respond to a John Mark Comer clip that's been making the rounds. John Mark Comer is a pastor in Portland, Oregon. He kind of toes the line between appearing a little more progressive than fundamentalist evangelicalism, but still holds some more what he might call our orthodox beliefs around like sexuality and things. And recently, a clip was sent to me from actually quite a few of you of John talking about deconstruction, giving his take on why deconstruction happened. So let's watch it and see what he has to say, and then I'll give my thoughts. Here we go.
There are about five major reasons that I see people deconstruct their faith, and you deal with each one differently.
Okay.
So the five would be this. One, this would be the main one I see. People who've had a traumatic or wounding or bad experience in the church or in their family of origin. Most of the time in a conservative church, almost always in a conservative church, they had some kind of a bad experience. I just found out, I won't say his name, one of the most famous Christians who's publicly deconstructed their faith in recent years. I just found out that his dad was a pastor who was sleeping with their babysitter, and then his pastor had an affair, and then the pastor replaced him had an affair. So like that screws you up. And I just have viewed this person as like an enemy of the faith, and I think this person is. But
oh, okay, interesting. So this first one that John talks about is really church abuse, right? And he gives a story that honestly is not super uncommon in the spaces I occupy. I've heard stories like this and others detailing why someone might leave the church. And it usually has to do with a pastor or someone in church leadership causing serious harm or the lack of accountability. But then John calls that person an enemy of the faith, which is an interesting take because, I mean, Jesus tells us to love our enemies. So I'm just kind of curious how John went, why he would choose that language of an enemy of the faith. But so far, this first point, I think stands, and I would agree. People deconstruct because of church abuse and because of unaccountable church spaces. And we detail this all the time, whether it's someone like John MacArthur, who has been credibly accused of protecting not one, but two different pastors on his staff who molested their own children, the long legacy of Mark Driscoll and his abuse, and despite 40 elders writing a statement saying this man's not qualified to lead, he is still well-platformed inside of evangelical spaces. So there's a lot of those examples. And of course, there are plenty of examples that are smaller that do not make the national news of pastors or spiritual leaders doing things that cause a lot of harm with no accountability. So far, I agree up until the, and I see him as an enemy of Christ kind of vibe. That's a little off-putting to me.
That just gave me compassion. Like, oh man, I mean, what would that have done to me if I'm like a 15-year-old kid and my pastor dad is sleeping with my, that's screwed up, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So many people have had a bad experience in the church because part of the role of the church is to bring sin to the surface. Like people, that's a whole other thing. But people that have had a wounding experience.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I agree with this in a lot of ways. I would argue with John in the spaces that him and I either currently occupy or have occupied, does the church really bring sin to the surface? Well, it depends on what we're talking about. If it comes to their perceived view of sin when it comes to culture war issues like queer inclusion or abortion rights, then I guess they're very loud about that. When it comes to internal sin, when it comes to abuse, other forms of sexual immorality, greed, slander, harshness, not really. You know, in particular, white evangelicalism, which is the space that John kind of works in some way, shape, or form, and calling out sin inside of their own ranks don't really go together. Evangelicals are not really known for holding their own to account. They're really good at calling out the speck in the other person's eye while having a massive log in their own eye. And by the way, I mean, this even goes for church volunteers, right? I'm sure if you were ever a church volunteer, the standard you were held to is so incredibly high compared to the standard that some of these really big mega church leaders are held to, who end up influencing how a lot of smaller churches do their Sunday morning event, things like that. So again, I would agree though, overall, I don't want to be picky. Yes, John, I agree. People deconstruct in part because of church abuse. Let's go to part number two.
Reason would be poor teaching. The church has a teaching function. And when people grow up under poor teaching, that can be a massive turnoff because what people are actually rejecting, they think they're rejecting Christianity or Orthodoxy or Jesus. They're actually rejecting like a really bad version of Christianity. Right. So, you know, when people are brought up without, I don't want to get into a theological thing, but maybe some of the furthest extremes of Calvinism, when people are taught that, you know, you were raped for the glory of God and for your good.
By the way, that's not a very extreme view in Calvinist spaces in America. John Piper has echoed sentiments like this. John Piper has said things like, if you are being abused, it's for the glory of God. There's some divine purpose behind it, and that gives meaning to your abuse. So, yes, I mean, again, I would also agree poor teaching, but I would also say that this idea that God has sovereignly predetermined all actions, R.C. Sproul says there is not one rogue molecule, is pretty mainstream in a lot of pretty standard evangelical institutions and ways of thinking.
Which I think is a false teaching, or when people are taught that some people are created by God to burn in hell forever in conscious torment to God's glory. I'm like, whoa. You know?
Same, John. This is how I grew up. I grew up under Calvinist teaching. I was taught tulip theology. And yeah, eventually I got to a point, right, where I said, wait a second, you're telling me that God is good and loving, and for God to get the glory that God needs, he has to predetermine some people like me for heaven, which is why I'm saved, but other people like my brother who's not saved for hell, so that way he gets the full glory that he's due. That started to unravel pretty quickly for me. And so I would so far very much agree with this point too, that we were taught very poor teaching. I don't want to get ahead of John here, so let's see what else he has to say about this point.
You grew up, or just people are given really just shoddy theology.
Yeah.
People will often react against that because, like, I don't want to be a part of that. That's not, you know, and are we standing in moral judgment against God? Is that actually what Scripture teaches? But when you're taught, no, that's what Scripture teaches, then it's hard not to reject Scripture, you know? Third reason.
Okay, yeah. Let me just say, I also strongly agree on this point. To flesh this out a little bit, many of us were taught that if we don't hold to biblical inerrancy, which in our context usually means that the Bible is the ultimate authority on matters of history, science, and morality. If you don't hold to that view, if for a lot of us, if you don't believe that the earth was created in 6 literal days, you don't take the Bible seriously. And then as we kind of expanded our understanding of the Scriptures by listening to other voices that knew the Scriptures better, you know, whether it's textual criticism or it's biblical scholars or theologians, turned out a lot of us were like, wow, we really were given a pretty shoddy understanding of the Christian tradition and the Bible. And it turns out the Bible is way more complicated than God said it, that settles it. And we're all interpreting the text, right? So I agree with John on this point as well, strongly, in fact, that, yeah, bad theology is a reason why many of us say, okay, I am in this basement of evangelical fundamentalism. I was taught this is all there is to being Christian. But since I've been above ground, it turns out I'm actually in a massive house full of Christian ways of thinking and understanding the Bible, salvation, Jesus, that are not based on that fundamentalism. And it kind of makes us a little angry because for so many years of our life, we were taught this is all there is. This is all there is to true Christianity. If you were a Calvinist like me, you were taught that the Pentecostals were charismaniacs and were probably demonic for speaking in tongues. If you grew up more charismatic or Pentecostal, you were probably taught that people like me didn't have the full gift of the Spirit. So once you start seeing that kind of, it's almost like that Spider-Man meme, right, where all the Spider-Mans are pointing to each other. Once you realize that, you're like, wait a second, maybe there's more going on here. So a lot of us leave evangelicalism behind in an attempt to find a better path forward in our faith. So far, these two reasons I am totally on board for.
Be what you just said, one of the things you said, many good things you said, would be that some people just want to sin.
Some people just want to sin. Oh boy. Okay, I can do this. I can do this. Here we go. Point three, some people just want to sin. Man, we were starting off on such a strong, you know, beginning, but here we are.
A nicer way to say that, but if you look at, you know, the number of people that deconstruct And then it comes out like, you know, this is an older person example, but like they are divorcing their spouse, or they're actually in an open marriage, or they're living with their girlfriend or boyfriend. It's like, oh, I wonder if those things go together, right. You know?
They can, but not for the reasons John thinks. For example, the whole divorce situation, that could happen because deconstruction, when it happens to a couple who is both Christian, one person gets really insecure and really worried that the other person is quote unquote losing their faith. And that creates major unreconcilable differences between them, and they end up divorcing. Some people realize that even in the biblical sense, sexual morality is not univocal, and that there are other ways of engaging in our sexuality that are beyond the basement of fundamentalism. Now, people like John would say, well, there it is. That's you wanting to sin more. I would call it repressing your sexual identity, for example. A lot of people, when they deconstruct, finally are given the permission to actually acknowledge their sexual identity being maybe bisexual or gay or lesbian, etc. And that had to be suppressed in these evangelical spaces because, quote unquote, the Bible is clear. So deconstruction gives people room to rethink some of the positions that they held. It's not because they wanted to, quote unquote, sin more. I have yet, and I've answered a lot of DMs, thousands of them, I have yet to have someone tell me, you know, I really wanted to sleep with my girlfriend, so I decided to deconstruct. Usually it's the other way around, where people start realizing that these things are actually negotiated. The Bible's not as clear as we think. Even the notion of marriage in the Bible is not the same thing as how we understand a Western marriage based on love and consent. I mean, see the work of Dr. Jennifer Bird for more on this. So once you start realizing that it's not the same thing, people end up having different sexual boundaries. But that's not the same thing as because I wanted to sin more, I deconstructed. And that's a very important distinction to make.
So some people just want an excuse to sin without guilt.
No.
Four.
Okay, just one final thought on that. If I wanted to sin without guilt, I would just become a mega church pastor. And I mean that. I absolutely mean that. If I wanted to be narcissistic and get tons of wealth and have power and have all these yes men around me so I can do things I wanted to do and no one had to find out, I would just enter the mega church pastor world and pull a Brian Houston or whoever it might be. Friends, I am so excited to be partnering with Middle Church to promote their event, Freedom Rising, happening April 26th to the 28th, sponsored by the Candler Foundry and happening at Marble Collegiate Church in New York City. This is a three-day conference that you do not want to miss. Find rest, learn how to organize political power, and dream expansively about the world we deserve. And let me tell you, this is a monster speaker lineup with absolute legends, including Dr. Jackie Lewis, Reverend Dr. William Barbara, Reverend Dr. Kelly Brown Douglas, and Robert P. Jones, the founder of the PRRI Institute, which is the place I get all of my Christian nationalism data. This is going to be a three-day event full of learning about how to take care of you and your body, how to take action on crucial issues, and how to live into different ways of being in the world. I plan on being there, and I cannot wait to see you there as well. Get your tickets now at freedomrising.org and be part of this transformative experience. That's freedomrising.org, April 26th to the 28th in New York City. I'll see you there. You move the world.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jennifer Bird. I'm a biblical scholar, and long story short, the reason I became a biblical scholar is I had been a very conservative evangelical Christian, and then I had a chance to learn more about the Bible, and it changed everything about the way I engaged the Bible. As an educator at heart, I actually wanted to help others find similar freedom and more loving ways of engaging the Bible. So that's what I do. I'm interested in helping others learn how to engage the Bible without harming themselves or others, basically, put short. And that is at the heart of what I see T&E doing on various levels here, specifically being committed to the values of love, justice, inclusivity, and non-dehumanization. I could not be more excited about the work T&E is doing, and I could not be more supportive of Project Amplify. I hope you will consider joining the movement and helping us make things happen.
Let's go. Point four.
Four would be there is overwhelming social pressure to be cool.
What?
Yeah.
And if you either are in any kind of a progressive environment, if you work for a progressive corporation, whether it's Nike or Delta or whatever, you know, as progressive ideas have entered a lot of corporate America, or if you just do internet work, as I'm guessing a lot of you do, then there is massive social pressure on you to fit in with all the leftist ideologies.
Oh, boy. John, what are we doing? Well, let's finish this point. Maybe he actually defines these leftist ideologies, and then if not, I'll add what I think he's talking about.
And to not, or even to be silent, not even to take a stand against stuff, just to not post certain things or say certain things, is like you're gonna. It's not a false perception that it will hurt your career. It will hurt your career. So Jesus, you know, spoke about the Pharisees who actually loved him and believed him, but he said they love, but wouldn't acknowledge him. And he said they love the praise of men more than the praise of God. Yeah. So some people, especially, you know, not to like Enneagram people or whatever, but certain people for whom like the approval of others is deeply connected to their emotional well-being, find it incredibly difficult to stay orthodox when their coworkers or their boss or people on the internet are, you know, will say horrible things about you. So what, you're a bigot, or so what, you hate gay people, or so what,
there it is,
people burn in hell, or whatever nonsense, you know, people say.
Yep.
And then the final reason that—
Okay, so that's what I thought. Usually I have found that when people like John say these things, they usually mean something around queer inclusion. So the idea is that corporate America is more accepting towards queer people and is asking its employees to respect maybe the pronouns of a trans person or to respect the humanity of a queer person. And that pressure causes people to deconstruct. That's wild. That, to me, that's wild. Now, I want to be very fair. John is in Portland, Oregon, and I understand that it's a different kind of culture over there. So maybe this is a real thing for him. Like maybe he has stories of someone's boss saying, hey, if you don't publicly acknowledge that queer people are not inherently sinful, we're going to fire you. Maybe that has happened to someone. But this idea that people deconstruct because of social pressure is, in my opinion, completely false, because for most people, their societal pressure comes from within evangelicalism, not outside. Most people who I've encountered who deconstruct were all in at their church, either as a volunteer, like in my case, or they were on staff, but their social fabric was woven together by the church that they attended. Their approval didn't come from their coworkers. It came from people inside the church. It came from their pastor. It came from being able to be on the worship team or being able to volunteer or lead something. So the pressure is actually the opposite. For someone to deconstruct, it just demonstrates how strong some of these beliefs become that leads you to think about things differently, where you know it's going to cost you probably your community, you know it's going to cost you the approval of the people that you want approval from, and you still follow that trail because there's something so compelling about it. You have to follow your nose, so to speak, right? You have to think about these things more critically. Most people that I have met who deconstructed were not looking for the approval of their coworkers. They didn't really care about that. They cared about the approval of their church. And when they came to different conclusions, or they were starting to entertain different answers to the questions that they had, right? Because evangelicalism does not have a problem with questions. They have a problem with you coming to different conclusions of those questions. So yes, let's talk about hell, but the answer is eternal conscious torment. And if you don't agree, we're going to kick you out. Now, some people might say that's extreme. Not in my opinion. Or yes, let's talk about queer inclusion, but we already have the answer. They're inherently sinful and can't be included. And if you disagree, you're out. So that's the pressure comes from that side, not from corporate America. And even if it did, is it that difficult to respect someone else's pronouns? Like, is that really the flag that we want to plant here? Like, oh my goodness, I worked at Nike and they said, hey, if someone that you work with is trans, please use their pronouns. And I just thought, oh, that's the compromise. That's the slippery slope. That's the worldly mentality, respecting the pronouns of another human being. Come on. I just find that this fourth reason is absurd. Most of us lost our entire faith community. We lost our people. We get bombasted daily from evangelicals how we were never saved to begin with. The pressure has always come from inside the house, not from the outside. And it also comes from a place where our theology that we were given did not match up to the lived experience that we had outside of the church. So the queer people are depraved and terrible and are coming for you. And then you meet a queer person, you're like, oh, this person's super kind and loving. And oh my gosh, they're a full-blown human. Wait, why are we excluding them again? Wait, if the Bible's more complicated and these verses are debated, why are we taking such hard stances here again? Like, why isn't there room to negotiate this stuff? So the pressure, in my opinion, always comes mostly from the inside. So deconstruction is something, in my view, that happens to you that you can't ignore, even though you realize and you understand pretty early on, if you keep going down this path, it's going to cost you something. And it does. It costs people their churches, their community, their identity in a lot of ways, and it's very anxiety-inducing.
Isn't talked about as much as I think there's like a satanic, demonic thing behind it.
Oh my God.
And, you know, Jesus said to Peter, Satan has desired to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you that your faith
my goodness.
May not fail. So some
wow.
people go through seasons of demonic assault where there is some kind of a full-on demonic pressure against their faith that is trying to rob them of any, and they might experience it as doubt, they might experience it as lies coming to them.
Doubt is not demonic. Doubt is to be human, John. Demonic oppression, demonic influence leads to deconstruction. This is your fifth reason? Wow. Okay, we'll keep going, but this started off super strong, and now we're just at the bottom of the barrel.
Destruction is the wrong friends, is the attack on the internet. But some of that can be demonic. Like some people are demonic. I went through a season where I felt I was, I almost lost my faith. I came really close. And in hindsight, it was a combination of poor teaching. I was reacting against some of the evangelicalism that I grew up with.
Okay.
And thank God for N.T. Wright and a couple other really good writers that honestly kind of saved my faith. And it was full on demonic. And so I felt that scripture come to me, Satan has desired, you know, but I pray for you that your faith may not fail. And I just persevered through it. And by the grace of God, I'm still here.
What does that mean? Right? Like, okay, so what does it mean to have demonic oppression over you? One day you're walking through life and a demon in the spiritual world enters your mind and plants a seed of doubt that eventually leads you to pull a thread about what you believe or to unpack the shoddy theology you were taught, to John's point. You end up changing your belief system. Most people who deconstruct tend to want to stay somewhere in the Christian house and find better paths forward in their faith. Some people leave the house completely. So if you leave the Christian house, it was due to a demonic influence on you and you just weren't strong enough to resist it. Like, this line of thinking does not compute for me. How do you prove this? Where's the evidence of this? I was always taught that Satan himself is not an omnipresent being. So Satan just happened to maybe see you one day, or a demon saw you and decided this is the person I'm going. Like, what does it actually look like to have demonic oppression over your mind? And why is it always in favor of deconstruction? Like, deconstruction can be because of demonic oppression. How about it's because of church abuse? How about it's because of Christian nationalism? How about it's because we couldn't reconcile the direction of our evangelical faith with the culture wars that they were always talking about? Like, there are so many other reasons to talk about why people deconstruct or renegotiate their faith other than demonic oppression. Like, it's just silly.
Deeply love Jesus, and my favorite part of my day is prayer in the morning. So not because I'm virtuous, just because Jesus is really beautiful. And if you don't know that yet, please get up in the morning and put your phone away and just sit and let Jesus love you. And it's really beautiful. So I don't want to stereotype people, but I think those...
Okay, so they are a little stereotypical. There is some truth to some of them. I'm happy for John. I'm happy that John said he almost lost his faith. He found writers like N.T. Wright, and he has a robust Christian spirituality and faith. I am thrilled for him. That's great. For me, Tim Mackey was someone who really helped me find a better path forward in my faith at the time. And so I don't want to knock John for his theology or beliefs. I just find it kind of ludicrous that out of the five, three of them are nonsensical. Like, they don't match up to any experience I've ever had with someone that's deconstructed. And not to put myself as like an authoritative source here, but I would say I've talked to at least 10,000 people over the past 3 years via Instagram DMs about deconstruction, walking them through deconstruction, talking about deconstruction. And ironically enough, demonic oppression, wanting to sin more, and societal pressure have never been brought up. The three big categories for me, I call this the unholy trinity, that has led to deconstruction for many people is bad theology, to John's point, bad church, to John's point, and bad politics, which John does not mention. John just seems to overlook 2016 and the fact that thousands, maybe millions of us were taught at an early age that, hey, sexual purity matters. Hey, we have to save ourselves from marriage. Hey, we can't be on the worship team if we're having sex with our girlfriend or boyfriend. Hey, God's not going to use us if we're sexually impure. And suddenly that got thrown out the window for the commander in chief, and people got mad at us because we couldn't support the guy on the cover of Playboy, the guy grabbing women, the guy who bragged about how he would date his daughter if she wasn't his daughter. Somehow we were crazy for saying, hey, I don't understand. This doesn't make any sense. So the bad politics is a huge, maybe one of the biggest reasons why people felt like they were forced to walk up the stairs out of the basement of fundamentalism, because the beliefs did not match the values. A lot of us assume that we had the same beliefs around God and the Bible and Jesus, so we have the same values in 2016 and further on. I mean, 2016 up until now has only shown how we had very different values going in with the rise of Christian nationalism. So yeah, I mean, some of this is good, but these other three I just found really lacking. And hey, you know, John, if you're seeing this, I'd be happy to talk to you. Come on the podcast. We can walk through this together. I'm happy to navigate it and to think about maybe a more nuanced way of having that discussion. But out of the five, these three of them are nonsense. So I would give this a C. A C minus. This is a C minus for five reasons people deconstruct their faith. Thanks for watching. Give this video a like. Subscribe to our channel. Talk to you all later on.